You're listening to the Bold True Life podcast with Hannah and Maimuna. We're sisters, life coaches, and we have honest conversations about what it takes to blaze your own trail in life.
This means we'll be talking about the triumphs and the struggles of showing up to our lives with authenticity, courage, and mindfulness. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Welcome to the Bold True Life podcast. This is Hannah.
This is Maimuna.
And today we have a special guest with us, my friend Risha. Risha Goral is the novelist of The Servant Boy, which was published internationally in 2016, and also writes for the South Asian Woman magazine, which is based in Canada. We are super excited to have her here with us today to talk about creativity, the publishing process, and whatever else comes up in our conversation. So, Risha, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, today, before we get started, we'd like to paint a picture for our listeners. Just tell us a little bit about yourself, where you come from, and maybe your background and what you were doing before you started writing.
Sure. So I come from a Pakistani-American background. I grew up in Northern California, and I was a business major before I started writing.
And so can you tell us a little bit about how you got into writing? Did you always know you wanted to be a writer? How did that happen for you?
So I, as long as I could remember, I always used to write in my notepad, but I never thought it was something that I was going to pursue seriously. And right before I did start writing my book, I was actually going to go to law school. So it was kind of like a last minute change that I had.
Wow. Yeah, you said to me at some point that you were studying for your LSATs as you were writing this book. We definitely want to get into The Servant Boy a little bit because this is your first novel and it was published, which is amazing. When I was reading it, I was quite amazed with it doesn't fit a genre, like a specific genre. It's kind of It's very creative, very different than anything else I've read. So I'd love for people to kind of get a sense of it. If you could do us a favor and read a little bit of an excerpt.
Sure. This is chapter one. Ahmed Suleiman, dead. Muhammad Iqbal, dead. Sarah Hamid, dead. Firdaus Abbas, dead. Michael Uzar, dead. The list continued on all the way down to the parchment roll. I tried so hard to fade it with my Sony Walkman and Patana Han's Mehda Ishkvitu. With every succeeding name, my heartbeat intensified. Goosebumps, too, penetrated through my body, stinging my arms and rushing through my spine, all the way down to the tips of my toes. Keep it together, I kept telling myself. But the names only grew louder, and the goosebumps turned to shivers. In hopes that the music would drown both internal and outside noise, I reached for the button to the left with my trembling right hand and maximized the volume. Please help contain me, Pathanahan, I kept telling myself. Please help contain me, Allah. Please. I couldn't lose my cool no matter what. After all, I was a Mard. Every Saturday, a gnome-like man by the name of Bobby Bobby recited a white parchment roll, and listed were people who had passed away the week prior. In one hand, he carried the list, and in the other, a bullhorn. But he was not complete without his very long white beard and green cone topi. One rested on his very bald head, and the other nestled on his very long chin. His appearance contravened his voice. He was short, restless, and frazzled. His voice, however, had the roar of a powerful automobile engine, hollow and rebounding. A couple times, in fact, he operated without the bullhorn, and the village people heard him just fine. Bobby Bobby stood in the anterior of a purple internet cafe in the middle of Model Village, the center of the liveliest part of the village, inculcating the crowd with names of dear deceased ones. Many people would walk away as the news pained them. The village was small, and it was not ordinary to hear at least one familiar name. Other people ignored it, and some chose to conduct their business at other intervals of the clock. Yet a handful stood through the recitation and faced the fear. These were the emotionally strong, the brave ones. Within seconds, their lives could crumble from the enumeration of a single name. I was one of these villagers. I waited alongside, trying to keep steady my composure as my every atom jittered. I refused to miss even one Saturday. I attended in fear that one day a friend or family's name would be called, and as a result of not attending, I would not know of their departure until many days later. Bobby always finished with a spiel. And what are you doing to find their cause of death? Don't just stand there and walk away. Do something, capable men and sisters. If we really want to, and if we really try to, we could figure it out. I beg of you, please at least try. Sadbor, the small village we resided in, had seen a death toll of 328 in just 3 weeks. There were different myths. Some said it was the pollution in the water. Others affirmed it was the toxicity in the air, while a few remarked it was in the mist from the hills. Many of these myths were foolish, and many derived from villagers, the most creative of storytellers.
Thank you. So this book, I mean, it starts off with this, and then it takes different turns. I'm not going to spoil it for the readers, but it's like you really can't fit it. The plot, you know, takes these turns, and you really can't fit it into genre, which I thought was really cool about, like, the creativity in that. Because, like, a lot of books kind of, if it's a mystery, if it's like a formula, if it's a romance, if it's a formula, like, how, what kind of effect, what kind of went into creating this for you?
So I think for me, I just wrote it as it went on in my head. So I don't think I planned it that way. It just kind of happened by coincidence. It was actually so odd. So I remember I was studying for my LSAT, and I was actually going to give the test in a couple of days, and the story just kind of came to me. And once the beginning and ending started, I was able to grasp the rest of it.
I see. Okay.
So you just had a general idea of the story in terms of how it would start off. You knew where you saw the characters going at the end, and the middle just slowly came together for you, is what it sounds like.
Yes, exactly.
And
exactly.
I know you're working on your second book right now. Is the process similar, or are you noticing any differences?
The process is actually a lot different. So I feel like this is taking me longer to write just because I have so much more going on. Mm-hmm. And I've also learned another language since I've written that first book. And so I feel like learning that new language has somehow impacted me to thinking differently. So as I'm writing this book, it's a completely different thought process.
So what's the language that you're learned or learning?
Turkish.
Okay. And what are the differences, would you say? Because I know if you speak more than one, there's definitely like the whole language helps you think differently. So like, okay. Are Turkish people more flowery? Are they more in their emotions? Are they more cut and dry? Like what does that bring to the process?
So I feel like Turkish is very poetic.
Okay.
And I feel like a lot of it is like indirect, and they're very, like I feel like they're very poised, like extremely poised. And I think they really think before they talk. So those are all aspects of my thoughts now.
Okay. That's really interesting.
Gotcha. So if we can, I guess, circle back to, this first book a little bit more. As Moni was mentioning earlier, it's published and it's your first, that was your first book that you ever wrote. So how did that happen for you? Because it's quite uncommon. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey from, you told us a bit about the writing process, but from getting through making the, or writing the manuscript all the way to publishing it, what was that like for you? How did you do
sure,
it?
Sure. how did I do it?
What was it like? How did you make it happen? Because, like I was saying, it's unusual, and it couldn't have been easy.
Okay, yeah, so it definitely was not easy. And to be very honest, I think I really doubted myself in the beginning. So once I was done writing that manuscript, I went back a few times, edited it, got an editor, and I had my husband read it. This is before I even thought I was going to get published. And he read it, and he thought it sounded amazing. And he knew a publisher in Turkey who was able to get it published. And then once that happened, I was able to get it published here in America, go to the market, and be sold there. So it's kind of a lengthy process.
Yeah, and how was it received? Like, what was the reception in Turkey at first?
So, I mean, I think it was really good. I thought it was anything beyond my dreams. It was beyond anything I had expected. So I think it was really good.
That's really great.
So it's definitely a very, very lengthy process. It takes a really long time to get it published. But I think once you have the okay from the publisher, that's like the biggest thing. Like once you have that okay, it's like you could kind of breathe.
Breathe, yeah.
So it seems like the finding the publisher in Turkey was the opening that you needed to get in Turkey as well as back here in America. So how many publishers did you pitch your story to before that? Or did you pitch your story to any publishers before meeting this Turkish one?
Yes. So prior to getting published in Turkey, I actually pitched here first in America. And I pitched to 10 different literary agents and publishers. And I can't even tell you by count how many I pitched to. I don't even know how many I pitched to, but it was a lot.
So you were doing the work. It one moment things changed, but you were putting in the effort before that too.
Right.
Definitely.
Right. Can you tell us a little bit about like how your background affects the story and how that also affects like just like your writing in general?
Definitely. So when I wrote The Servant Boy, a lot of my thoughts correlated with the Urdu language and Pakistani culture, which is my background. And if you read the book, you could definitely see that throughout the book, you know, the culture and the different elements of the culture. And since I've wrote The Servant Boy, since I've learned a new language and culture, and I've also traveled to new countries and cities, I definitely have to say that this next book also has a very strong cultural component, but not as strong as The Servant Boy. And so I feel like my thoughts will always directly and indirectly affect the writing. I've been to Pakistan numerous times, especially growing up, like before I was 16. I think we went like every year, every other year. And I definitely saw that there was like a huge, like a socioeconomic clash. But I've seen that, you know, I've seen that throughout the world. But I just feel like there was like a really large gap between the poor and the rich. And it was almost like, if you were born into poverty, then you couldn't really get out. And so, you know, times are changing and things have become a lot better. And, you know, this is prevalent throughout the world. But it's just something that has always hit me, not just with Pakistan, but without the world, is that, right, you know, in some countries where you're born into poverty, you can't get out. And so that's something that I wanted to write about.
Yeah, that definitely shows. So your story is a little different. This servant boy does eventually get out. And I thought that was a really interesting, like the way that you did it was just like the message was around that kind of thing. Like given a chance, what could someone do, really? Yeah, so that kind of also struck me.
I'm glad you thought so.
Yeah. And can you tell us a little bit about, like, who inspires you or What inspires you in your writing?
Sure. So I think hardworking people, positive people, really inspire me. And someone in particular is my husband. I feel like he's always like super, super positive, like no matter how hard he has to work. And that kind of it kind of reflects my personality as well, because I feel like I've always been like that also. Like I feel like along with hard work, you need to maintain positive no matter how hard you have to struggle. And so those are some of the values that I think are really important and something that inspires me.
And when you're, so I agree about the positivity. It's so true. It's, when you can keep your outlook positive, there's something, it lightens the load in a way that, like, if you're just super overwhelmed, it makes it a little bit easier instead of thinking about, everything that could and will be more difficult along the way. Like, just having that positive outlook, the expectation that it'll all be worth it, that things will come together, things will work out. But sometimes it's really hard to stay positive. So I'm curious, like, in those moments where you're struggling and you know the value of being positive and having that outlook, but like, how do you maintain it?
So I definitely feel like over the years, and I feel like I'm still learning. It's kind of like we train our brains that way. So I feel like everyone, this happens to everyone, but right when you go into that pothole or that negativity, right when you feel like it's happening, right then you need to get out and just go the other way, go up instead of going down. Just think positively, right? Also, like reading a lot of positive self-help books, watching TED Talks. Like I love to watch TED Talks. So I think that really helps. So right when you go into that pothole, or you can feel yourself going into that pothole, just to immediately go back up.
And do you, like, what do you hold on to? Like, what truths do you hold on to? Because I know that that's, like, a lot of people hold on to something to keep their hope going. So what thoughts or truths or do you hold on to in your lower points where you're not feeling hot, but like, okay, I still have to keep going?
Well, I definitely have like a list of things that I want to do. And I always go back to the things that, like my personal goals that I've like already accomplished. And so I kind of always go back to that, and I'm like, hey, well, like I didn't think that was possible, and I did that. So, I need to remain positive for the rest to happen.
Yeah, so as a writer, like, a lot of people have blocks, like writer's blocks here and there. Do you experience that? What do you do with that?
I experience that a lot. What I usually do is I take a break, and I'll try to read like some other material, like another book. Or like one thing I used to do in California is I would go to the beach a lot, but that's kind of hard to do here in the East Coast. So I just like to take walks, or I'll just like write in a journal. I'll try to think about other things. So just something that keeps me busy, because I feel like that was like not just for writing, but for anything. Like we definitely need to take a break sometimes, just to clear our heads and, refuel ourselves.
Do you, I experience that too, like where the creativity stuff show up, pop up in my head when I'm not thinking so hard. So like when you're doing a lot of routine things, like if showers, driving a car, like when you're just like,
Right
I
before
don't
bed.
know. Right, yeah. Is that your process too? Like, is that when you're not actively like trying to make it happen?
That's so funny. I was actually talking to like a group of students who wanted to become writers like some time ago, and I was telling them this, is that what you just said is so true, because even as a writer, that happens so much, is like the craziest ideas will come like when you're driving, or you're on the airplane, or you're like taking your kid to the bathroom. And so I feel like as a writer or, as someone who is in the creative field, you need to always be ready. So right when the idea comes, like I usually just write it down on my phone or like a notepad. Because I know that if I wait to write it, it's good, the idea will go away. So right
It's
when the
gone.
idea occurs, yeah, I try to jot it down right there and then.
That is a good, yeah,
So
that's
when
good
you
advice.
jot it down, now, will the idea, like sometimes you're, yeah, if you're, I don't know, if you're on a grocery run or driving or something, you can't write down all the details that are coming to you. So does it help just jotting it down? Are you able to piece it back together later on, or do you need to write down everything that's coming to you in that moment?
Okay, so if it's a lot of different ideas intertwined in one, I usually just record myself. But if it's just a basic idea, then I just kind of jot it down and it usually comes back later.
That's a brilliant idea too, recording. If you're not in a place where you can write, just to hit
Yes.
record. That's really helpful. And you mentioned your husband a little while ago, and then you mentioned talking about, taking your kid to the bathroom and having an idea come for you or come to you. And that's one of the things that we didn't mention, or two of the things that we didn't mention about you yet, that you are quite busy. So in addition to writing, you're a mom of a toddler, and you also run a business with your husband. So I'm really interested to hear a little bit more about how all of that comes together, managing the different pieces and having, cultivating this creative part of yourself while also doing all of the other things that you do.
Well, I will say it's definitely difficult, but that's the lives of many women. Many women go through the same boat, are in the same boat. I guess I just kind of play those roles as they go. So I think that, even before becoming a mother, I feel like as a woman, we have so many different parts of our brain that are constantly lit up. And we can't shut any of those things off, right? So it's just like this. So all those different roles that I have and I play are there, and I just have to kind of manage them as they come.
Do you strategize like your time, or do you just kind of figure it out day to day? Like, what's your how do you deal with the actual logistics of it?
I kind of figure it out day to day. I usually do like the office work earlier in the day when my child is at school. But then there's some days where I will just focus on writing. So I guess
It just
it
kind of
just happens as it,
depends.
yeah, it just kind of depends. So like let's say there's like an emergency at work that I have to fulfill, then I'll just do that. However, if there's something that I don't need to manage right away, then I will focus on my writing more. So it just kind of depends. Yeah, it just kind of depends on the day and the week. The week. It depends on the week and what's going on that week.
I always think too, like the whole creativity thing is always like a messy process. And a lot of people say that. It depends from week to week. It's not like this neat, like 9 to 5 type of situation ever. It's messy, and yet there's like a little bit of acceptance of that you try, obviously you stay as organized as you can, but
It's not, I agree.
I guess another question I would have is in writing The Servant Boy. I know we're kind of skipping around from creativity to like the actual book, but it's something that just popped into my mind was when you were writing that, can you tell us a little bit, like you were doing your LSATs, this was before you were married, not like this was right, like before you were married when you were
Yes,
writing
this
this?
was before I was married, after undergrad, and I was working and I was studying for the LSAT.
And now we have like a kind of a picture of your life where you've learned another language, you have a son, and you have this business that you run with your husband, and I understand you travel a lot as well.
Yes.
So I guess my question is that it, like in seeing the differences of the two situations, what has remained the same in your process? Like, what is a steady thing that you feel shows up for both, like in the creative process for both these spaces?
So like the way that I write?
Yeah, or just like what elements of the creative process have stayed the same for you?
Okay, so it's so funny. I feel like when I write, I kind of go in reverse. So I have to have the beginning. I usually write down the ending of the story first, and then I get all the major ideas together. Like what's going to happen in the story. And then the other big component that always shows up is the character map. So I have to have the characters, their names, and their descriptions written down before I can actually delve into the story. So once those components are developed, I can actually start writing the manuscript.
Okay.
And that's been prevalent in the first book and then this book as well.
That is so interesting.
Yeah, that is.
And I that... was... Sorry, go ahead, Winnie. I'll
go
say
ahead,
it
go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, now that you said that, it makes so much sense why and, you know, how you're able to paint such, like, vivid imagery in your story. Mm-hmm. Because I think you had a really vivid idea, clear idea of who these people were before you even, you know, wrote the story. So you knew when you certain situations came up, you probably already knew, okay, this is how they would respond in these situations, because you thought about that before. So I was just going to say it makes sense, and that's very interesting.
I actually never thought about that. That's a really good point.
Yeah, it's interesting what we get out of it. And even the question I was asking, like in my mind, I hadn't even thought about the writing process, like as I was asking that question, but that's kind of where you went to. I was just wondering like what elements of like, I don't know, I don't even know how I would answer that question, but just like what other elements, not so specific to the writing, but just to the creative process. You mentioned writer's block and it comes up a lot, or like finding ways to get inspired. Like, are those similar for you from before and after, or
So I've definitely done more traveling after I had my son and after I got married, and I feel like traveling, like whenever I go to a different country, I always seek inspiration from that. And actually, going back to that, so the way my parents raised me was that, you know, everyone is equal and you can always learn from a different culture. And so I feel like because I was raised that way, I'm always able to pick up on other cultures in a positive way. And I feel like whenever I go to like a different country or like a different city, or I meet new people, I'm always able to find inspiration from that. So I guess going to new places and meeting new people, and just talking to like my regular group of friends always helps with the creative process.
Mm.
So just to be in like a new environment, I guess, always helps.
That's a really good point, because we talk about this too, like just getting out of your comfort zone and then new ideas come up, right? Like just getting out of your space that you're always in. Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah, it opens you up to things that you hadn't considered or seen before. Oh, it makes sense why that happens. Any other questions, Mooney, before we jump into the final one?
No, I think we're good to the final questions now.
All right, awesome. So, Risha, our final question for you is, what is one way you'd like to show up more boldly in your life these days?
I guess just to be myself. I mean, I already am myself, but I guess just to never forget that, who I am, where I come from, my journey in life, who I walk with, who I'm responsible for, what I like and what I dislike. I feel like if I continuously remember those things, then I can continuously show up boldly in life.
Got it. Yeah.
That's great. Thank you so
Yes.
much for being here and sharing
Thank
with
you so
us.
much for having me. Thank you.
Yeah.
It was such a pleasure.
All right. Take care, guys. Hope you enjoyed this.
Bye.
Goodbye.
You made it to the end. Thanks so much for listening.
Don't forget to subscribe, and you can find us at boldtruelife.com/podcast or your podcast player of choice, including iTunes, Stitcher, and Google.
We would love to hear your thoughts on today's conversation.
If you like what you hear, please take 2 minutes of your precious time to rate and review.
It really helps us out. Thanks.